This season of Perf Bites is brought to you by Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. HPE has the expertise and solutions you need to transform your business or government and change the world. Learn more at hpe.com. Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, accelerating next. And Flood.io. We sort out the infrastructure so you can spend more time testing. Flood.io is load testing simplified. Learn more at www.flood.io.
It's time for Perf Bites.
What the f*** is Perf Bites?
The fourth square meal of the day.
Don't bogart the Perf Bites.
F*** waffles.
Microwave ready.
Add nutritional value to your brain.
Right up jackalope.
It's time for Perf Bites with your hosts Mark Tomlinson, James Pulley, and Howard Chorney.
Perf Bites.
Whatever.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Perf Bites.
Welcome.
Hi, Mark. How are you doing today?
I'm fantastic. Hey, James.
Yes?
You kicked us off at the top of the hour.
I did, because, Mark, you know what the topic of today's show is?
No, of course not.
It's switching and converting.
Switching and converting. Does that mean, like, becoming a different person?
Well, I guess it could be. You know, I'm reading this book called Evolve right now by a good buddy of mine named Stephen DeSalvo. He's actually a Microsoft SQL Server evangelist.
Oh, really?
For a number of years, yeah. So he's written a relationship book. So he left being a SQL Server evangelist, went to art school in Italy, came back to California, and he just went bonkers.
That's very cool. That's very cool. So switching and converting yourself is evolving. Evolving from a SQL Server evangelist into an author and artist.
Well, you know, it could be, but in this case, we're talking about switching and converting tools.
Tools, because the season, this entire season about tools. Tools. Tools.
Yeah. Tools.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, you know, we've been getting a lot of questions about how do we make the switch? What tools should we switch to? What tools are the cool kids using? And so I kind of thought this might be a good topic for show.
It would be. I think it is. And you get a lot of folks that are interested, or somebody tells you casually, hey, James, you can't do that with that tool. You need to switch and use this tool. You're like, oh, that must be easy.
Exactly.
Oh, nothing in our world is that easy. Anyway, we wish it was that easy. But before we dive into the deep end of the switching and converting tool, let's give a little summertime announcements, because it's May. It's May now.
That it is.
It's very exciting.
And right off the bat, I want to remind everyone that they can give us a call or send us an email if you have a question or concern, or maybe you need a referral on the Relationship Dynamics book.
Sure.
You can send us an email to ohmygodhelpme@perfbytes.com.
Yes.
Or our phone number is 77-LOAD-PERF.
77-LOAD-PERF. That'll get you there. At the same time, we give our continued shout-out for the seasons, both HPE, HP Enterprise, and our friend Tim Koopmans at Flood.io. So if you haven't gone to check out what those guys have, some new announcements, some new capabilities, do yourself a favor and at least check it out, because you never know. You might want to be switching to one of these tools.
Exactly.
It's all about the tools. Really great stuff. Also, give you some reminders, even though we're headed into the summertime, and sometimes people go into the summer and they don't think about work as much, right, James?
Like, because really, you know, the biggest thing coming up is next Thanksgiving, and you know, we only have to lock it down at, you know, say, beginning of September. So we can kind of wait to that last week of August.
Yeah, but that's not true. Actually, it's good conference time, because if things are kind of, everyone's on vacation, the kids are out of school, you know, if you can take your summer vacation off and that kind of stuff. There are still some conferences going on in about, a month and a half here. In June, middle of June, I'll be at Belgium Testing Days. I'm doing my Performance Essentials workshop. It's a pre-conference workshop all day. Really, really cool.
So Mark, are you required to drink a Belgian Abbey Ale while you're delivering your workshop?
I would accept that challenge.
Okay.
I don't think that requirement would sit ill with me in any way, shape, or form. So I would welcome that. At the same time, I'm going to be doing a conference talk. I'm going to do a Puzzler session there. There's also some great open space stuff. So if you haven't checked out Belgian Testing Days, that's btd.btdconf.org. check that out. Alex Padelko, of course, invited me to come out to CMG. And James, I don't know if you'll be able to make it, but we're going to do some CMG-ness out in November. That's in La Jolla, California. That's much later in the year. As well as Test Bash that same week. Test Bash Philly is going to be in November that same week. So I'll be on the West Coast and the East Coast all in the same week. That's going to be rather exciting.
And then, Mark, coming up in September is STPCon in the fall in Dallas.
In Dallas. So we're going to go. I haven't been back to Dallas in quite some time. You've driven through there a few times in the last few years.
You know, I think we're going to have to go barbecue hopping while we're there.
We did go. We went to one place. Sean Bradshaw and I think, God, I can't remember who else was with us. It was a whole group of folks. It was really cool. We went to a barbecue place. It was pretty good. But we can do some hopping. That would be nice.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so CAST, STPCon in September. We're jumping around a little bit. CAST is in August, and that's in Vancouver, British Columbia. So if you've never been to Canada and you want to see some beautiful mountains and water, it's really great chi because you've got, you know, the mountain energy and you've got the water energy. So Vancouver's, you know, you can align your chakras and hang out with good chi while you're learning about
Sasquatch. And you can go Sasquatch hunting. Isn't that, you know, part of the natural range for the Sasquatch?
That's where they filmed the Slim Jim commercial.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I love that guy.
Yeah. Yeah. They're pretty funny. So CAST is coming up in Vancouver, British Columbia. I'm trying to see if I can make that happen. At the same time, we've also got a confirmation from Howard, who's not with us tonight. Howard is going to be hosting the Perf Bites Summer Barbecue. This will be the fourth annual, right? Fourth annual Perf Bites Barbecue on August 19th, and that'll be in Framingham, Massachusetts. So anyone that right before, you know, the summer vacation is out in August, head up to the Perf Bites Barbecue. You're welcome to join us. We'll be doing some barbecuing-ness. Heck, I might even bring the Weber up and do some actual smoking on the Weber. That could be interesting. But yeah, that's what's coming up. Lots of announcements and things. So come out and see us. If you need to come out and get some inspiration, do some training, ask some questions, or even just have some scotch tasting with us, we will be there in these different.
And don't forget, we always have the cheese course.
There's always the cheese course and the barbecue thing as well. All right, James, let's talk about switching and converting.
So what is this whole switching and converting thing anyway? I mean, you got a good hammer. You love your hammer. You know, it drives nails, it pulls nails out. You know, why would you get rid of a perfectly good hammer,
Mark? Maybe I hit my thumb one too many times and I just emotionally, I don't like that hammer anymore.
Oh, well, okay.
Yeah. Why does Thor like Thor's hammer? You know, it's got really good balance or something like that.
Well, only he can pick it up.
Yeah, I never really got that idea.
Yeah, kind of the hammer picked him.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, there's some good hammer humor, in the Avengers movies. But what about a jackhammer? Maybe I need an automated hammer. What? Forget the hammer. I've got the pneumatic nailer now, dude.
Oh, good point.
Yeah, that would be good. Toss away the old hammer, pick up a new one. You know, nothing changes. You know, I can. I should have the same project plan. If I'm using the same hammer, pneumatic nailer, it's the same, right?
Maybe.
Hammer's a hammer.
Hammer's the same.
I mean, but, if you buy a pneumatic nailer, it costs the same, right? So the finances, licensing is the same.
You might need a sledgehammer. It's hard to split wood with a pneumatic nailer.
It might take a lot of nails.
Yeah, or a jackhammer, you know, if you're splitting concrete.
Yeah.
So specialized tools for specialized needs, but Mark, I think one thing we do need to talk about here is hammer safety when you dispose of your old hammer.
Because you don't want a hammer just to lay around where kids, innocent children, could hurt themselves on a hammer.
That's right. You know, a hammer is a potentially deadly weapon, but you know, don't pick your hammer up and throw it over your head. Or you're going to get some sort of Three Stooges-like event to occur, you know, flying hammer, bonk, right on the head.
Flying hammers, yeah, it's very dangerous.
Yeah, that's not good.
All right, so the hammer is just a metaphor, right?
Yes.
There may be some people listening who we've lost them already on the whole hammer discussion. You never know.
But so just to clarify, the hammer is your performance testing tool.
Yes.
Yes.
Go and watch the movie Dr. Horrible, his sing-along blog. It's a very funny movie. Captain Hammer is Nathan Fillion is Captain Hammer in the movie. It's very funny. Mm-hmm. So if we start, I mean, the topic is switching and converting and explaining a little bit of why you would get rid of your old tool and move to a new tool. First of all, let's just talk about the context for why somebody switches tools at all. Like, how you'd think you'd buy, and as a longtime LoadRunner guy, I was like, I've got 40 some protocols here. I've got, I can do just about anything. I can bring in DLLs. This is like, holy cow, it's got everything in it kind of tool. And I might think to myself, you know, why would I ever want to switch from this tool? And of course, our sponsors, HP, are like, yeah, Mark, why would you ever want to switch the tool?
Well, you know, a lot of organizations, Mark, pick tools tactically. And yep. they pick them because Joe knows them and we're going to have Joe do the performance testing, or it works with our process. You know, we're more Agilista type stuff. And it's like, oh, all the Agilistas do this tool type mm-hmm. of thing. Or it's just that's what we've always used.
Yeah, that's what we've always used. So there's, just to separate the discussion, the separation between switching and converting is switching is what brings you to decide to switch. And so we threw a few things out there, and one of the ones that came first to mind is clearly a platform change.
Yes.
And I'll say that you can have, if I'm in a Windows shop, and I would recommend look at LoadRunner or Neotis, really two really good Windows-based products. CloudTest as well. I'd think about CloudTest as well, but it sort of runs independently in the browser, which is nice. But they're sort of native, live in the Windows world, suffer the Windows platform. It fits with that platform. I'm going to have the least amount of resistance choosing that tool. And let's say there are maybe some incumbent tools, but it's like here's one that fits that platform. Or we're humming along, James. We're a Windows shop. And I love these tools. And then all of a sudden,
Mark, let me give you an actual quote from someone.
Yes.
Is why don't you pick a real tool that runs on a real operating system?
Opinion.
That's an actual quote that I heard one time.
Of course. And at the same time, you might bring up a cross-platform independent like a JMeter who runs in Java, no matter where it is. And you come on to somebody else and say, hey, can you help me debug this script? I'm looking at this interesting payload or issue or exception. And they take one look at your computer and like, oh, is that a Windows machine? I can't help you.
It's like, yeah, you need to be on a Mac before I can help you, or you need to run Linux or BSD or OS, you know, something else.
And to be honest, I don't think your shareholders or your customers or your CFO or whatever really cares all that much as a stakeholder how you get the job done in what operating system. And most companies have a little of everything running around, but there may be a change in the platform where while we really were coding in, we were a .NET shop, we had a lot of this stuff, and we've just done an acquisition, and now I have to do, we're going to convert a bunch of our stuff over into the, and they're a Linux, Mac, Unix shop, Oracle, a lot of Java, whatever, and all of a sudden it's like, you know what? My comfort zone over here in a .NET shop, you know what? The platform is so different. It's an opportunity to just step back and look at everything and say there might be some better tools that fit better in this other environment. So platform change is a big one.
Yeah, there could be some requirements that come with platform changes. They need not necessarily be OS changes. It could be you acquire a company and now your accounting software has changed and, oh my God, we're now in the PeopleSoft SAP realm.
Yeah.
And we need tools to support that, or we're moving to Citrix infrastructure. We need tools to support that. We've deployed a new IVR solution, and we need tools to support that.
Yep.
So each one of these can dictate a particular tool set, which may be different than what you have today.
Yeah. And a good reason you've seen the major players in load testing tools become more extensible and more open, like we've got almost I'd say the top three or four tools between CloudTest and HP and even Neotis, I think, they all have the ability to wrap some of the open source tools like JMeter or Gatling or some of these other ones to drive load, which is something, you know, roll up your sleeves in almost any tool. they're fairly extensible. They may be not easy to be extensible, but they are almost always extensible in some way, shape, or form. So the truth is, being open and extensible so that you don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater, as the old saying would be, or I'll throw the old hammer out with the new hammer. So no, if it's hammer babies, hammer say, I'll remember hammer safety. But that's the idea. So platform change is one of the impetuses, impeti. I'm going to
yeah. And Mark, I'm going to throw the next one in here just to save you.
Yes.
You know, the thing that everybody always complains about when they're the ones not signing the check.
Yeah.
Is, gosh, that tool is so darn expensive.
Oh, yeah. Load Runner.
And we really hate that company. They keep auditing us and stuff.
You know, I kind of, you can have that sort of adolescent a reaction if you don't understand business. And I mean big business, right? To think that, you know, a company like HP or a company, any of the tool vendors that are making a good living, they also make a lot of money, and they also pay. They pave the way for. They pay lots of jobs. They hire lots of people. I mean, business and economy makes the world go round. I mean, sure, you could look at them, some of them, and say, "You're just price gouging me. This is crazy."
And let's be honest. A lot of this question is usually around value versus price. Mm-hmm. If you're just not getting value out of the tool, whether you have a good team or a bad team, it really doesn't matter what the price of the tool is. If the value is less than the price, you're probably going to switch.
Yeah, and it could be you're going from paying for a tool, and perhaps that tool failed because of process, because of skill or talent or value, the conversion of value, not to get abstract. But let's say somebody has a great tool and they're successful, and all of a sudden they have, you know, something goes wrong in a test and somebody gets really upset. Somebody misses a milestone, misses a project, who knows what. But they're like, blame the tool. If you go back and listen to our episode on blame the tool, there's a lot of people that point the finger at the tool. And the only way to move forward as an organization with, you know,
it's either fire a person or fire a tool.
Yeah. And so you might end up, you know, throwing out the tool just because of, well, you know, we paid a lot of money for that. So then they go to the open source route, and then they switch to another investment of that. So it can just be pure licensing. You know, I think a long time ago, before people really knew that automation tools in all kinds of testing, that automation tools really do have a concrete purpose and serve to value. And if you're not actually a hardcore ROI, I don't know any major tool vendor that does not have a hardcore ROI model, a cost-benefit model, I'll say.
Yep.
A cost-benefit model put together. So, yeah. If you're just not getting value out of the tool for some reason, it could be you're like, I just hired five guys that want to build their own tool, and you know what? We're going to do that. And so sometimes you'll see switching. Maybe you don't agree with the reasons, plus or minus, but the truth is you're in that situation and you need to figure out how to make that switch. The other, like, we sort of touched on this a little bit, James. Have you ever been in that situation where, like, a new manager or a new management team comes in and they, like, sweep everything under the rug? They're like,
oh my God, Mark, how much beer do you have? Because I've run into this several times within the last year, where a new VP of, you know, insert label here comes in,
yeah,
and says, well, you've hired me because I'm the expert and you're going to do X, Y, Z, alpha, beta, gamma, and throw all those tools away.
Yeah. And sometimes it's for no technically good reason. They're just, I'm going to kind of take the organization through change for, yep, political reasons, maybe, or just because I have to have an air of newness about me. So
I know those tools, and you're going to use those tools.
And have you been in a situation like me where somebody brings you in and says, well, we really need to have some data around the conversion or around this idea of switching. So can you compare tool ABC to tool ABCD? And it's like, basically, let's say we're just doing web-based testing. So many of the load testing tools support HTTP, HTTPS, web services, and those are very common.
And then you get into the, well, you're using tool B today. How many of the features of B are you using? Because if you're not using those features, Or do you consider them to be of value if the other tools don't have them?
Yeah. You know, and I think that when I was working at HP, it was like, was part of the idea was, you know what, there's 90% of the sales are really in the web world. But the web world itself was becoming incredibly diverse and complex. So we almost needed to take the web world and split it out into 40 other protocols or something like that.
Yep.
But yeah, I think it can just be political change, which can be really frustrating as an engineer, because I'm like, you know, why are you making me change? You know, I know how to do all this work in this tool, and
Mark,
you're just sort of...
it's all about the power.
Power.
You power. Must,
I have the power to force you to change tools.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy. So watch out for politics. This can also happen around acquisitions. So if you're in a startup and the startup gets acquired by a bigger company, sometimes the bigger company says, well, you know, part of the merger, we don't need this, we don't need this, we don't need that. And so you're going to have to...
Actually, I can give you another quote on that one for tool switching.
Really?
We bought you. You will adopt our tools.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes you end up having to adopt a lot more than just their tools, you know?
Yes.
And we'll talk about that in the conversion part.
And I think this is probably a good time for a break from our sponsor, LightSquare.
Hosting for PerfBytes.com has been provided by NewCo, New Centers of Excellence in Performance Engineering. The Script Farm, LoadRunner by the Hour, Cloud Architect, Videratech, and LightSquare. For more information, please visit the website at www.newco.com or call 888-212-1104.
What do you think about boredom, James?
There are a lot of people that feel like they're getting stale. They know the tool that they have. The tool that they have is either, you know, widely accepted in the market or not. But either way, they just want to improve their skills. It's like, well, let me sing a chorus of Blame the Tool and let's get a new tool in here.
Yeah. And maybe you don't have an immediate reason, like, oh, the platform's switching tomorrow or this is changing. You're just like, you know what, I'm maybe heading for the exit, you know, in a month or two or a couple of months, but I need to learn this other tool, so I'm going to start using this. I also see this, James, where people have, like, they just want to keep people interested in something new so that they won't leave the company quite really. You know, it's like, hey, guys, we're gonna switch to a new tool just to keep things fresh and interesting so you don't get bored and just,
I believe,
you know,
this
leave.
Is called the squirrel theory of tooldom.
What?
Yeah, like for ADD people.
Oh, it
look
could
around,
be.
It's like, squirrel!
Yeah, I think it also happens when like, the office of the CIO starts a little pet project. And yeah. It's like, oh, it's got, you don't have to follow all the rules. This is a lot of early Agile or XP type little projects became, this is our experiment with a new process and, you know, trust the new. And, you know, sure enough, those projects are completely, that's the norm now. But you could find these little projects off to the side are like, well, we're doing an initiative in the cloud, so we don't use normal tools. We're going to go use BlazeMeter or Flood.io or the Octoperf stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to use a cloud-based tool to do. Great. You know, is it really all that different? Maybe not. The three vendors I just mentioned there are all JMeter-based. So if you sort of...
Yeah, all under the covers, you know, it's the same technology, but maybe you like a different flavor of one versus the other.
Slightly different graphs, different extensibility, yeah. Who knows what. Different price point.
You like know. The Portuguese tool versus the Spanish tool versus the Italian tool.
Well, when it comes to food, those are very different things.
But you know, they're all Latin-based languages.
Well, they are.
But you see where I'm headed. The root is the same.
Yes, the root is the same. But Italian food is unlike the other two in any way, shape, or form.
But they're all good.
Yeah, they are. They're very tasty. The tools are very tasty.
So Mark, ultimately, this comes down to really three broad categories.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a forced switch, politics or whatever.
Yep.
You've got an evaluated switch because, hey, your needs have changed and, you know, you need to take another look.
Yep.
Or you have, how should we term it, a resume-driven switch.
Yeah, the boredom equation, or let's do a new project just because we don't want to lose the brain power in yep. the company. Yeah. And so if you're in a situation in one of those three modes, I think we'll call them modes, if you're being forced to switch, or you hit a limitation in a tool and you want to evaluate what's compatible with something else, or you're just self-interested, you'd need to go through a few steps in your thinking, regardless. And so, you know, I would say the first one in a forced switch, sometimes, you know, whether you get to talk to your managers or change their minds, or you fight it or you don't fight it or not, put all that aside, eventually you're probably going to have to pick up and learn the new tool. And therefore, you need to go through some of the things that every tool needs to have. You need to know column A, column B, or even column C. If you're, let's say you're going to switch and you're actually going to make a purchase, you're probably going to have to do some sort of tool comparison spreadsheet and look at these different properties or characteristics of the tools. Also, if you ever want someone to spend more budget on a tool, you really have to basically spell it out, cost benefit. This feature does this, and here's the benefit and why. And of course, most of the tool vendors, I mean, the salespeople and pre-sales, will help you put that model together so that they
leverage your salesperson, leverage your sales engineer, especially.
Yeah, these are tech. This is a really good point, James, because so much of these types of tools are highly technical tools, and they're not 100% tied to a platform. Like, let's say, James, you're going to go work in a .NET shop. What IDE are you going to end up using?
Probably Visual Studio,
because it's fairly tied. And you remember back now, and if you were to switch over and do something in a Java shop, it's probably Eclipse, maybe the JetBrains stuff. Maybe there's a couple other ones. If you're in the web world, there's a little more fragmentation. You might use Atom IDE, a more loose web-based IDE. Maybe there isn't an IDE anymore in the same way. But the idea with testing tools, they're just as technical as a development framework or the IDE frameworks that when you use them, but they're almost crazily independent. Like the features really go after technical compatibility, and can you exercise the interfaces of the application. So the ability to generate load in a load testing tool is still the number one thing you want to compare. And I think to your point, James, on this, it's all of the different APIs. Can I record them? Can I replay them? Right?
So this is not a trivial exercise.
No.
Let's say you're going after database performance testing. Well, you can do that in say a JMeter, but it's a hand programmed option. If you look at a load runner, or if you look at a Neoload or a Borland performer,
yep.
You've got the ability to record some of those interfaces, so you get an immediate boost in productivity. So it's not necessarily just can I exercise; it's how long does it take me to get to something that actually runs?
Yeah.
In some of these cases.
Yeah, yeah. So you can list all the protocols and just have two columns: record and replay. You know. And then and then comment on the side, you know, sort of the quality of it. Did it, you know, I look at scalability of a protocol. A lot of dings we got on True Client because at the time when we introduced it was very heavy. It wasn't as scalable as the little itty bitty web virtual user, the old Turbo web virtual user. So, I mean, the idea was, is it scalable? Is it extensible? In some cases, you record a protocol, you can't do much to edit the script. It's sort of, you replay what you get unless it gets really hard to do that kind of stuff. So it's like, how extensible and flexible can I modularize my script? So really understanding the ability to generate load and exercise the system under test, that's really, really key. That's probably the number one thing you'll want to compare. And let's say you're in a forced switch from tool A to tool B, it's still good to know, hey, I know how to do everything in tool A. I'm moving to tool B. Let me do some parity evaluation here and go back and look at it. But also, we want to look at monitoring is the other probably key part. Get your X-ray glasses on.
And it's not just generic monitoring. It's got to be able to monitor your environment.
Yeah. Don't just stop with somebody saying, sure, we can monitor a CPU, disk, memory, and network. Because, James, you'll end up at a gig where somebody says, well, I'm running version 2.3 of HPUX. Can you work with that? It's like, oh, we're not compatible with that. So there are all these little esoteric things. Monitoring is can be one of them.
Yeah, and it's not just the OS. It's also the services layer. You know, can it monitor my database? Can it monitor my app server? Can it monitor my web server? So you need to, you know, invest a little time with your architecture team, get all your platforms and say, can I grab the data? Or if I can't grab the data directly with the tool, can I grab it from a third-party tool to integrate it a little bit later for analysis?
Sure. So Dynatrace, look at New Relic, look at even the CA, the Wiley solution, the CA stuff. Interscope, I think, was the old product name. Or even straight up, you know, JMX monitoring in Java, or you've got direct.net monitoring into the CLR itself. You know, can you pull this, I was thinking the ETW, the event tracing stuff from Windows, and pull some of this stuff directly into your tool. So if you, extensibility is a big part of that as well. Again, if you're in an evaluated switch, it might be something where you're like, we got to Windows Vista and we're done as a Windows shop. And James, this is an interesting thing too, to think about load testing tools that a lot of people run their automated tools on the desktop or what's equivalent of a laptop, a client. Mm-hmm. But really the compatibility for load generation probably runs on the server, especially if you've got a bunch of servers to run load against and in and on. Your load generators are
huge from a compatibility perspective.
Yeah. So sometimes I've been at companies for security purposes, for whatever reason, where they don't even allow certain types of tools to be installed in the data center. Like you can't run an Ubuntu desktop or a Windows desktop, a Windows client, on a machine in the data center for whatever reason. That's their policy. And sometimes you're not even in a situation where you got to go with it. But it's like, hey, my tool supports these separate, like I can just run cloud tests as a server over here, and then I have these remote load generators. And the remote load generators, hey, those can be various different server-based operating, Windows server, they could be a Linux-based server, or even a hardcore Unix, right, Solaris.
So Mark, as we talk about this, we're pinning it down, you know, saying your, it's exercise your interfaces, monitor your environments, being able to analyze your data that comes out. You're talking about being able to run on your hardware and your operating systems.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people don't think about these things before they make the switch. It's like, you will go to X, and sometimes that forces an entire infrastructure switch just for X.
Yeah, and some people are stupid, James. Just to put it right out there, bold and clear, sometimes like at a political regime change, you know, you're going to go with this new tool, and it's because there's maybe some cronyism, a little bit of nepotism there. Like, well, my buddy works for that other company and I just scored a deal for him, blah, blah, blah.
And I'm going to get a kickback when I leave here in 18 months. They're just going to put it in a bank in the Caymans and...
In Panama somewhere. And, you know, that stuff's pretty rare when it happens, to be honest. And if you smell that happening, there's probably nothing you can do about it anyway. So... You know what? You again, having the switching skill or the idea to analyze this stuff is really good, because sometimes, you know, you're stuck with that tool and you've really got to be inventive around it. I know folks that are like, you're going to use LoadRunner from now on. So we're a JMeter shop. So thank you to, since LoadRunner 12, you can run JMeter from LoadRunner, and they just kept everything in JMeter.
You can run use LoadRunner to run your JMeter scripts. Or you've got the whole issue of matching your team skills.
That's right.
Let's face it, Java developers are not usually C developers.
Even though they could be.
They could be.
It's not, you know,
of course, as a C developer, I look at Java as a language for failed C developers. But, you know, that's just me. You know, I'm a C guy. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And, you know, to be honest, we're not talking usually load test scripting. If somebody's building an entire framework in the TSL, the TestScript language, or whatever it is, they're probably overdoing it anyway. You know, basic programming constructs will get you through 90%.
Yeah, a lot of, you know, flow control, string manipulation, some loops.
Yep.
You're good for the most part. If you're doing all your memory management and your test tool, yeah, you're right. You're overbuilding it.
Yeah, probably. Now, the last thing I would say is switching a tool, especially if you're moving from a more sophisticated tool to something that's less sophisticated, more specific. Like, let's say you're going from LoadRunner to Gatling, right? Very, very specific, limited capability.
So you're going from an 18-wheeler to a roller skate with a motorcycle engine.
Not even, like, it's like a chainsaw engine on each heel of your shoe. And you'd, there you go. Which is probably enough to transport you pretty quickly, but not safely. The reporting, and this is where I'd say not just reports in report format, but the data from your tool. If you're using it now for trending in continuous situations, or you have some compliance reports that need to have specific language in specific formats that are approved, does your new tool support that reporting and management in the right way? Do you have any flexibility? If it's fairly flexible, you'll probably be fine. If you can get the data out into any kind of data munging tool, I'm trying to think of some of the data munging tools off the top of my head.
R, Splunk.
No, what's the cool one that has the that everyone talks about that has the cool? I mean, aside from putting it into like Splunk, Elasticsearch, and the Influx Grafana stuff. There was another one recent. Tableau was the other one. Like, you know, so if you switch tools for load testing, but you want to, that you can do the reporting and stuff through a third party, even Excel. I mean, you could do it through SharePoint. Excel.
You know, Mark, this is a really good point on the reporting. It's often overlooked. I think we need to touch on that when we talk about converting some things that you need to look at there.
So, James, I think it's important considering change. Why don't we take a break for a public service announcement here?
Okay.
You know them. You see them hit the end of an iteration and they just plain ran out of time for performance testing. You hear them convincing the VP of development to just fire all the testers. You see some other kids aren't testing at all. And you see the cool kids, well, you know, they're testing in prod. It can be tough under all that peer pressure just because you want to be cool too. But being cool isn't as important as it seems. Perf Bytes encourages you to keep your own commitment to quality steadfast and not give in to those trendy, cool hipsters who don't know how to test and who, by the way, don't pay for what happens in prod. Stand your ground against emergency promotions and too fast releases directly to production without any testing whatsoever. Know that PerfBytes supports you because friends don't let friends deploy without testing.
So everyone, welcome back.
Yes, welcome back.
Yes, so Mark, we've been talking about this concept of switching. In kind of the three modes, you know, forced or evaluated or resume driven.
Yes.
And now in part two, I think we need to take a look at what happens after you switch. So now it's conversion time. And yeah. I think the place to begin is where we left off with switching, which is this concept of analysis and reporting. Now, I've always thought that when you switch tools, this is a great opportunity to revisit how you're reporting to your stakeholders.
Right.
A lot of people just take the reports that come straight out of the tools and they hand them over. You get a lot of head scratching. Say, people look and say, ooh, pretty graphs. but it may not be exactly what your stakeholder needs in order to make a business decision. Or an ops decision or a risk decision, I think this is a great time to sit down and talk to them and just say, what exactly do you need from us versus what we want to give you? And maybe look at revising how you report back to them.
Yeah, I think change is always an opportunity to revisit, throw out stuff that was bad. And you may have had a great tool but the way you were using it was not so great. So if you're in a situation where you're switching, yeah, sit down and have that conversation and say, well, here's kind of the way we have been reporting it. But since we're investing a little of effort in the learning curve, it's a new opportunity to have a conversation and say, what do you guys really want? And if we have some new capabilities in the new tool, what can we do for you to make things? You may have been able to do them in the old tool, but hey, you know, whatever. Move on to the new one.
But let's take a look at what they actually need and then figure out how to get that out of the tool that you're converting to.
Yeah.
And that will immediately boost your value in the eyes of your stakeholders. Like, oh my God, they asked me what I needed and they're actually going to give it to me the way I need it.
And the tool vendor, to be honest, the person selling you this tool potentially is going to be pleased as could be to be like, wow, we're part of increasing the value. I mean, this is a great success story. And then they'll have you do a white paper success story and they'll invite you to their conference.
They'll take you to a worldwide users conference.
Yeah. It'll be really, and you'll get free drinks and you'll get a free certification maybe on the tool in the news. So maybe nice. So think about that. The other part of this, which is, I don't want to say is the evil part of sort of the analysis, is that you may find that the new tool you're forced to switch to is limited, doesn't do what you can before. And so it's really important to keep in mind some of the new technologies. We talked about, you know, new tools and techniques earlier this season. Ways to transform your data, maybe export it into other formats. I just mentioned Tableau before, but there's also the Influx data, the Elastic tools, Excel, just Office, Excel, and SharePoint. You know, you can do a lot to take a fairly meager tool, and I've taken stuff out of JMeter's meager JTL output or just even the straight-up output and pull that into Influx and Grafana.
Mark, I've taken raw monitor data, passed it through Microsoft Log Parser, and come out with beautiful graphs.
Yeah, and so be prepared if you do hit a limitation in your new tool. Just look at what it would take to get over the hump and maybe come up with a, all right, it's going to take us a couple of weeks to kind of build these glue code, the integrated code, get some data out. If you think about LoadRunner had the analysis API, so you could pull data out of the database and put it into other tools, and vice versa, you could pull tools in. So just be aware that when it comes to analysis, your stakeholders might get really upset. You guys switch tools, and where'd my fancy report go? I'm not, you know, now you're in trouble because you lost their attention or you lost their trust, especially in compliance. The thing you could lose is the fact that you're now been out of compliance for 3 months because you didn't produce the reports that somebody wants with the right language. It can be silly as you didn't. It's now called response latency instead of response time. And legally, it's a response time. I've heard the strangest things, believe me. So be a little bit careful if you're in a regulated environment or you're testing for compliance. Some of that language is really, really important.
Now, Mark, these switches are and conversions are never cold. We never generally turn off tool and then turn on a tool.
Yeah.
So there's a time where you're going to be running two side by side. Either you've got one project that's running long, you're going to start up a new project, however that works out. But there are some challenges here on running the same tools on the same infrastructure. We have this even within the same vendor families on occasion.
Yeah.
That is, you've got, you know, tool A and tool B, they just don't want to coexist.
Oh, they don't get along. And it was a little bit more, I mean, I remember it back in one of the most common examples I always saw in LoadRunner's monitoring is the monitoring interval, the frequency. Where you're sampling through RStat or through Perfmon, you know, every 3 seconds, every 2 seconds. And the over-monitoring, like, oh, you're using your tool for monitoring, I'm using my tool for monitoring, and so-and-so's using their tool for monitoring.
And you get quantum monitoring, the fact that you're looking at it so often, it's actually distorting the performance of the box.
Yeah, isn't that the Heisenberg uncertainty principle? No, it's a...
Heisenberg uncertainty is you know, when you tear something apart, you want to put it back together. It resists going back together. That's why they have to have Heisenberg compensators in the transporter rooms.
In the transporter room, is that right? What's the other one where the observer is always and forever a part of the observation?
I don't know. I can't remember that one.
Okay, fine. Well, I'm observing now. It's another H, though, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So, but getting back to this infrastructure issue, it's you may have to run dual infrastructures for a while until your switchover is complete, because the last thing you want is a tool to not be behaving as expected, because that's going to reflect poorly on your test results.
Yeah, yeah. And so this the other things you can see is if you want to have two tools that record. Back in the day, we did recording tools. There was a hooking recording was this kind of mechanism. And a lot of the vendors picked up on this. Well, if you installed tool A first, tool A would work, and then tool B couldn't usurp that. So you couldn't run, you know, or in some cases, you'd have tool A running, and you want to use tool B. You have to shut down tool A, reboot, and then run tool B. So these weird sort of, at least in Windows, there were registry hacks and stuff. Be careful that if you go through this phase, as James is talking about, where you're running side by side, that the tools themselves might not be totally compatible. It may not be an issue in the web world if you're just doing sort of proxy-based recording. And depending on how you record your scripts or how you actually build that stuff, can also happen on replay. I've seen companies that are like, hey, I went to replay tool X and it replaced a library. And the other tool is like, I want to replay my script, but the library is different and not compatible. So,
or let's say even you install a third party proxy for whatever reason, and it destroys the value of your recording proxy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So be careful about the side by side stuff. At the same time, there's another point here you're making, James, which is you want to run sort of parallel for a while when you're going through the conversion, because again, think about the first tool, the incumbent. You've got a tremendous amount of trust built up of those results. And I'd say it's a recalibration almost effort. Would that sound like the right word? Like we calibrate all of our pass-fail understanding of good and bad.
Yeah, I mean, you have this level of knowledge. You know what you know.
Yeah.
You don't know what you don't know on the new tool.
Right.
But you're going to try and replicate what you do know through the new tool.
Yeah.
And that's going to help. That gives you a basis of understanding that you can use to apply to the new tool in this case. So you're going to wind up doing some co-deliveries here for a short period of time to assist your knowledge transfer.
Yeah, and I like to think about this. Some people actually make, hey, LoadRunner, this is my system of record. Like that is. If your other tool comes along and says it's faster or slower, I don't trust it. We pick one tool, and it's a good practice to sort of have that because you'll end up with a lot of argument. Like, what if your dev team and load testing team use two different tools, and then the ops team for synthetic monitoring use a totally different tool?
And well, they all have different numbers.
They all have three different numbers. And, you know, there is something to be said for if those numbers are out of whack by, you know, 10 or 15%, you're really going to end up in some arguments as to whether you did or did not meet an SLA or whether things truly are they high risk or panic mode or not that big a deal. And
well,
so
you have another issue here as well, which is for the project planners, every single tool has both a labor and a tool quotient associated with it. That is some amount of time is spent in each one. And it's going to be different for every single tool. If your project planner is planning for tool A and you're now on tool Q and tool Q takes longer for labor, that's going to throw them off as well.
Yeah, especially if you're a planager.
Yes.
Yeah. No, that's it's a brand new word you just gave, but it's a person that the project planning manager.
Yeah.
Yeah, planager. But you list some phases here where advising people in that conversion, I kind of like this. You sort of you go through a phase where the old tool is primary and the new tool is secondary,
right? So you're still delivering on the old tool, but you're kind of coming up to speed on the new tool a little bit
and checking it to make sure. All right, is it in tolerance or out of tolerance, or are we doing everything right, or do we need to adjust the approach? And as you stated, you go through co-delivery on both tools, so people get used to it. And hopefully, if there's new value and new exciting stuff in the new tool, you're showing that off and you're getting ratification that that's good. And then phase three, you would just flip it. So now the new tool is probably primary and the old tool is there as a backup. You know, oops, something, the new tool failed us, couldn't scale big enough with that protocol, or we, you know, maybe licensing we misunderstood. You know, so the old tool is there just in case.
And phase three, this is where you want to get everybody to sign off and say, okay, now we have a pretty good understanding for the new tool, how long it takes to do various tasks. You like our delivery. We're giving you what you need.
The reporting
all
is
of
good,
those
yeah.
reporting, things of that nature.
Yep.
And, you know, once they sign off, then it goes to phase four. You're in the new tool.
You're in the new tool. So there, you can think of it as a slow process of conversion from the old to the new, which is very exciting.
Yep.
Very exciting. Now, along this path, before you actually start getting into this, obviously phase one, you're just starting to use the new tool. A lot of people will try to switch tools and they say, what, James, go watch YouTube and tomorrow you're the expert.
Okay, so here's an observed quote from a Big Four consulting practice to one of its team members. Mm-hmm. You're going to be leading the performance testing effort tomorrow. You should go home tonight and watch a bunch of YouTube videos and I'll meet you here at 8 in the morning.
And now you're the lead.
Yeah.
Yeah. I you know, James, I used LoadRunner for how long? 20 plus years. And we just happened to work with a customer recently that was pretty much all JMeter and a little bit of SOAP UI, Load UI kind of stuff. And I did everything wrong in JMeter, trying to make it work like LoadRunner without really understanding how to get out of my own way. And you know what? There's not a lot of training and mentoring. I end up following the leads. I read the Flood.io blog, the BlazeMeter blog.
Yep.
And I learned, you know, that's how you learn. Some of it is self-directed. I will say if you're in a situation where you're being forced to change vendors, like a management change, or there's a big vendor change, let's say you were switching from HP tools to IBM tools. Usually the sales guys will be like, hey, we're going to do a big training class. So you'll go and take the base, you know, give me a 5-day training class, convert all my skills, ask all your questions. Like if you understand everything we talked about in this episode, you can ask we do this way in this other tool. How do you guys do it? We do it, you know, that should be part of the pre-sales process. It should also be part of your training and or mentoring that gets you into the new tool.
And you know what? That sales engineer that you had in for the proof of concept made everything look so easy and elegant.
Oh, how'd they do that? James, it was so
just,
sexy.
Just because they had a great amount of knowledge in their own tool set. You want a person with those capabilities, maybe not that field SE because you'd be pulling them out of sales, but you want someone who has an appropriately high level of skills and communication skills and mentoring skills to be on site at least through that first two phases, phase one and phase two, when you're still at that awkward, just learning to walk.
Yep.
You know, you're dropping everything on the floor and they can pick it up. And,
scripts won't compile.
Yeah, they can write you a little bit. And, you know, you want that assistance because if you don't, you're going to struggle for years down the road. And we actually see this in the performance testing profession when we interview people who have never benefited from training, never benefited from a mentor, and they only reach about a level 3 out of 10 for efficiency and capability.
Yeah.
And it's not a reflection on them. It's a reflection on their management.
Yeah.
When they were doing that transition.
So if you don't get it as part of the deal, if you make a new contract, a new license with a new tool, you may still want to plan time if, let's say, it's an open source tool and you really do have to learn in the forums. You really have to watch a lot of videos, read a lot of blog posts, and I at least plan the time. Give yourself a month. Give yourself an hour a day to take one really important thing you do in your current tool and figure out how to translate that best into the new tool. And is it on par? And that's when you're in sort of phase one of the conversion.
Now, Mark, I think there's an analog here. Did you ever take a language when you were in college other than English?
Yes. Ich kann ein bisschen Deutsch.
Okay. There is a point where, you know, you're taking a language and you're learning a language and in your case, French, where somewhere down the road, you're going to be asleep one night, and then all of a sudden people are speaking French to you, or German or Portuguese or whatever.
Yeah.
That whole concept of dreaming in the foreign language. When you first do the switch, you are thinking natively in tool A that you just had. It's going to take a while to funk over and think natively in the new tool or dream in the new language, so to speak.
Yeah.
And there is going to be an efficiency hit. And that's usually about 3 months of hands-on.
Yeah.
What I've seen.
And I think we use the term fluency. Are you fluent in this tool or this language? Yeah. Are you fluent in JavaScript or in Scala or in Java straight up or in .NET? And I think you can see this also in terms of features, not just language. You can see it in terms of how do I bring in data into my load test simulation and randomize that data. Every tool has slightly different ways of doing it. The concept might be the same. And so you might tell yourself, I can figure it out. But those subtleties, there are some subtleties. Make sure as you're going to the new tool, some of those subtleties will get you like, oh, darn it, this is limited. Darn. Or, oh my gosh, I went to the parameterization engine in LoadRunner. I was like, that's really, or a cloud test. Those are really nice. They have some guys that save you a lot of time and headaches in doing that kind of stuff. That dreaming in a new language of, all right, they just asked me to simulate X, Y, and Z. I wonder how I can do that. And sure enough, if you're fluent in the new tool, then it comes very easily to you.
Yes.
So give yourself time to reach that. I think you had mentioned probably three months exposure into a new tool. I will agree with that. You know, if you're spending at least a couple hours a day in the new tool, you could still find in 3 months later, finally, you'll be like, wow, I feel pretty confident I could do anything with this, with the new tool.
Or yeah, know what same, it can. Same holds, you know, switching programming languages, switching, you know, Clips to Visual Studio. It's 3 months.
Yeah. So, James, you wrote something else here I think is really interesting, is this idea of new versus a ported work product, meaning actually like converting actual scripts. Like I ported the old scripts into the new tool. There are some limitations here. What were your thoughts here?
You know, can't you guys just write something to convert all of our existing 10,000 scripts?
I see this in the functional world a lot, you know, because a lot of it is like the object map and the properties and the coordinates and the function calls, the tags of the script language. Load testing wise, it might be a little... It might be a little easier.
About,
I don't know.
Think about load testing scripts outside of like web services or database call. They tend to have a very limited life anyway.
That
cross just a few releases. So you're much better off, you know, when you have the opportunity to go ahead and just rebuild it.
Yeah.
Because you're going to need to do it at some point in the near future anyway.
And you might find a fresh recording in the new tool may highlight things that the old tool didn't quite show you the same.
That can
be good.
There is some value in the old tool, in the old script. Essentially, you have a roadmap of where all the dynamic data is, where all the parameterization takes place and things of that nature.
What
and that is incredibly valuable.
And the flow, right? So it's like, let's say it's just a standard e-commerce flow. You might have some esoteric sort of steps in the shopping cart or some exception paths. You've sort of figured out the flow, which is not necessarily technical. It's more about the end user's pathway.
And by the way, hopefully your script is heavily commented, so you knew what you were thinking when you built it originally, or when Howard, who's now off on another project at another company, was building it for you as well.
Yes. Yeah. So wouldn't that be nice? Comment your code. Yeah. Which brings me back to a pet peeve, which is why we don't have people do code review of automation assets. We really should. There really should be a peer code review. And if you do paired programming, I don't know any developer that doesn't want to pick up a new tool. Usually they're very curious and they have stuff to get done. But if you do paired load testing, if you write code,
you should adhere to the coding standards for the organization you're in, whether it's test code, whether it's application code, whether it's stored procedure. It's all the same.
Yeah, now more than ever, people, you got to have your test code checked in the same place that you're going to have the actual code, your test kit. The last thing I would mention or throw out there is that your process might change with a new tool. How you use it, what kinds of, you know, when you can engage, if you have, you know, now you have new recording capabilities where you could do front end performance with the same tool that you're doing load testing, you bring them together.
Or you have tools that run inside the same solution as your developer interfaces, your developer IDEs, so they can just engage the tool right there, begin testing at unit testing phase.
Yeah, small component level. So when you engage and how you engage across the software development methodology and engaging with your peers, that could change as well. If you move to a new tool that has better capabilities and better integrations that way, or I'll say just more sophisticated or complex integrations across the lifecycle, yeah, dude, you might be, your process might change. You know, those old days of let's sit down and have a questionnaire and I will ask you these things and you must know them. Well, you know what? If we start testing really early and maybe that process changes, we evolve the requirements
Heck, you might wind up, your developers are running unit and component assembly level performance type items and you're stripping the logs and reporting defects back to them on an almost automated basis.
Yeah. It's a brave new world, man. The process can change as well. The backend process may also change as well. Especially if you move to using tools in a more continuous way, if you're stepping up to a tool that's integrated into continuous delivery and at least continuous integration, the way the data comes out of the backend, how you escalate a bug, a defect, to whom you escalate those defects to and how that works out may change as well. So the follow-through part of the process could change. I wouldn't say dramatically. I mean, the idea of doing load testing, unless you're in the stone ages of, you know, I must have perfect code to do a load test, which is never going to happen, and development is going continuous and you're stuck in the waterfall at the end of the process, you know, that has nothing to do with the tool. Maybe the new tool will jump you forward into changing your process, but it could happen. It could be part of the change as well. So James, we'll just give a shout out as a thanks to one of the listeners sent an email to ask@perfbytes.com, Jaspreet, who apparently used to maybe work at Mercury or HP back in the day, and he seems to work at AppDynamics now. But he sent us a really nice thank you, and particularly wrote, "This is my first time listening to your podcast. Was thinking to spend 5 minutes, ended up spending 60, which is record for a guy with ADD.
Yeah. Squirrel.
So congratulations, Jazz, for listening for more than 5 minutes. And it's officially an hour and 4 minutes, I think, for us at this point. So congratulations. Keep the work up and stay on the meds for that ADD stuff.
Squirrel everybody. Squirrel. Squirrel. Well, everybody, we have come to the end of another interesting show on Perf Bytes, this time about switching and converting. Hope you found it interesting, especially since, you know, Mark and I are switching up roles here.
And we're converting. Hopefully we've converted them into podcast listeners.
Hopefully so.
Switch them into radio listeners.
As always, I would like to thank my mother for listening. We always know we have at least one listener, and at least for me, it's very comforting because, you know, it's Mom.
That's right. At least there's one. The one and only one. And thank you as well, everyone, for listening. I'll give a shout out to Martha, the sexy Irish voice of Perf Bytes. And, of course, a special thanks to our sponsors, HP Enterprise, HPE, and flood.io, saying hi to Tim. We should see some new logos and some other stuff get on the website from these guys. So, and we actually will be having some drill down conversations with these guys, some dedicated episodes. So if you want to hear more in depth what's happening with at least those two tools.
It's going to be very cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. We haven't actually been on a good deep dive episode. So a lot more fun stuff coming. And of course, I'll let you know, James.
Yes.
Today's show is powered by bunnies. Fluffy, floppy-eared, lucky-footed, gray and pink, bubble-bum-colored bunnies.
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 Well, Mark, I would like to let you know that all the contents of this show are protected by a giant killer hair. If you don't want to meet your maker over copyright issues, just run away. For more information about Perf Bites, visit the show's website at www.perfbites.com or follow us on the Twitter, the Tumblr, and the Facebook. And of course, you can always subscribe and listen to Perf Bites podcast on iTunes, iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, and testingpodcast.com. Just open your favorite listening app, search for Perf Bites, and click on the subscribe button. Please send us an email with your questions or thoughts at ask@perfbites.com or even leave us a voicemail at 77-LOAD-PERF. That's 775-623-7373.
The Perf Bites show and staff are supporters of the Practical Performance Analyst, the Performance Engineering Book of Knowledge, Test Bash and the Ministry of Testing, the Computer Measurement Group, the Workshop on Performance and Reliability, and of course, Software Test Professionals Community of Software Testers. Of course, we see you at the next STPCon conference coming in Dallas, we talked about. I believe it's in September. Visit stpcon.com for more details. Obviously, there's early bird pricing. We will be there doing a live podcast. We'll both probably be giving presentations, talks, maybe a workshop. But it's one of our favorite conferences for performance testers to learn more about this fine craft we do, as well as some single malt scotch tasting, which is, don't be confused between single malt scotch drinking and single malt scotch tasting, because a few people went a little far. When we were in San Francisco.
The last time when we were in New Orleans, it's like, you know, don't follow them. Yeah. They're professionals.
Yeah, it can be. We're just tasting. It's about sips and tasting. It's not drinking. That's it's more cost effective to do that with cheaper liquor. You know what I'm saying? And of course, James, maybe we'll do a barbecue road trip. We're in the Dallas area. We're going to be down in Dallas. We could drive around, maybe pick a top four.
Yeah, well, we could do like a barbecue.
We'd be there for 3-4 days. We could head out each night and do a barbecue taste.
Because, yeah. So, in the end, thank you everyone for listening. Have a great day. Catch us on the next episode of Perf Bites. And everyone, live long and prosper.
Convert well, friends. I don't want people to take that the wrong way. You know what I'm saying?